and welcome to Sister Act. This is a podcast where two sisters talk about movie musicals. I am one of those sisters. My name is Jackie.
I am the other one. My name is Nicola.
And today we are talking about a movie we've both forgotten a lot about because we watched it at least a week ago.
I'll remember as we talk about it.
Okay, great. It's The Color Purple. We have different feelings about it, so maybe this will be interesting to listen to. Also, just a note, there's a lot of industrial sawing and jackhammering happening in the background for me. If you hear noises, just know that's what's going on. It's not a break-in. Oh, there it goes. I don't know if you can hear that. Okay, anyway. I love the musical. That's the situation. The situation is that I was disappointed by this movie because I love the musical and it felt to me like, why even do this if you're not going to make the best possible version of this musical? Feels more like a remake of the Spielberg movie to me.
Did you read my Letterboxd review?
I think I did, but also kind of a while ago.
Because, well, I didn't write it until like a couple days ago. But
it just feels like a while ago.
I feel like you think that my opinion is really different than yours, and it's not. It's just slightly different.
Okay.
But yes,
Things we're coming into with this is I know the musical probably better than Nick does, and Nick watched the Spielberg movie much more recently than I did.
I watched it the same day. I watched The Color Purple in theaters, and then I went home and I watched the 1985 Color Purple.
And neither of us have read the book. I don't know that Nick knows this. It's an epistolary novel.
Are you aware of that?
Okay. I would really like to read it. It's been on my list for a while.
Yeah.
But
it's on my list too. And if I owned a copy, I would be reading it right now, but I have to wait to attain one. But yes, I think I'm really curious because I can't really imagine this as an epistolary novel.
Yes, me too.
So it makes sense to me that the story, like the adaptations, are so different.
The musical does feel like there are elements of like writing letter, like she's saying dear. It just feels like some of the language could be lifted directly from the book more so than the movie. Because just the nature of music is such that you can, like, sing a song that feels maybe like something you would have written down in a diary as opposed to...
Well, without having read the book and having nothing to base this on, I feel like the musical is a more accurate
adaptation
than the movie.
The queerness of Suge and Celie is, like, explicit in the novel.
And I think that because...
No, even though I haven't read it.
And I know that this is probably just because of my, like, what's the word I'm thinking of?
I don't know.
My encounters.
Innocence.
No.
I don't know.
Like, the fact that I knew the musical first, that I feel like it's just a more complete story. Like, it feels like when I was watching The Color Purple movie that there was a lot left out in a way that I don't... When I'm watching or listening to The Color Purple soundtrack, I feel like, yes, there was different aspects and themes that have, like, been concluded in a way that feels like a story that went from beginning to end.
I think that my experience as someone who saw the movie first years ago and then encountered the musical and was like, holy shit, this musical rules. And I also don't feel like I think that the adaptations of this work are interesting and like historically significant in some ways. And so I care about this story, but I am not like when people are like, what's the like, why are we telling this story? I kind of get it, you know, like I get their not understanding what's the point of retelling this story of just like suffering and like, you know, like obviously it's speaking to something that's true and interesting, but it's also like, what does this do for us? Like, what does this like, how do you talk productively about The Color Purple is not something I yet know. And so for me, it was like, okay, movie feels like a complete story to me, but like, you know, it's missing some of the more controversial elements of it. But even the movie was very controversial, like, and the way that black men react to The Color Purple historically is also like interesting. I think the movie is like a complicated and interesting and good, not like necessarily morally, but just like a well-made movie. I don't feel like, oh, this movie is bad. But then the musical, I think, the narrative of the musical production that I'm aware of is that, like, they went back to the book. They were not adapting the Spielberg mm-hmm. movie. So it's just a different story. And my frustration with this 2023 movie is that it's, like, instead of adapting, it's not going back to the book, and it's not going back to either one of the, it's, like, it's not just saying, let me make a remake of the 85
yeah.
movie, or let me do a screen to stage adaptation of the musical. It's like trying to do both, and that makes it feel so much worse to me. It's like it feels incomplete because it's not quite a musical.
It does, but to me, if I were to rank them, having seen them in the same day, it goes musical, 2023, then 1985, because even though the 2023 film is by far the most, like, tonally incohesive and inconsistent, I just prefer that narrative. So even having some of it made me feel more satisfied than I did watching the 1985 version.
And that's where we differ, because I go musical, 1985, this just feels pointless to me. And I am like, also, you know, you're catching me at a moment of remake fatigue. I'm just like sick of these Disney things. I'm sad that there's no, you know, like, I think part of the reason I loved Kimberly Akimbo is because I'm just like, everything about this is so just like spawned from someone's imagination. There's like, I just think it's so interesting and feels like a new story in some ways that I'm just like kind of starved for. So seeing a movie that I was excited for because it was like, oh, this is gonna be a movie that doesn't exist yet. There is no movie of The Color Purple musical, which is a different thing than The Color Purple movie. Mm-hmm. And then to feel this be like hindered by its instinct to remake an existing movie, it's like people just don't like what it just makes me sad in a way that is maybe like if this had not been coming up on a decade of Disney remaking animated movies worse in live action for no reason, like maybe I would feel differently, but I just am like, what's the freaking point? And I do feel like, even though I agree with you that, like, yeah, the story the musical's telling is more interesting, like, execution matters to me. Like, even if it gets a slight bump on story, it doesn't do a good job of telling that story.
Yeah.
I would rather watch a well-made, well-told story than a story that I find slightly more interesting.
I understand.
Just fumbled so hard.
I know that me preferring the poorly executed movie is a wild take, and I completely understand everyone disagreeing with me. But I don't know. Like, there was something, and maybe seeing it with a friend who knew nothing about The Color Purple, and she was very affected by it. And it allowed me to kind of give in more. And
I
definitely think that you being so disappointed in it, I came in with my expectations, like, underground. So the fact that there were really good moments and that it was all around pretty fine made me be like, wow, I'm relieved.
It's also interesting because I saw it with a friend who knew the novel and not the musical or the Spielberg movie, and they enjoyed it. And I was like, I guess I really think, I like read an interview with Ali Willis and Brenda Russell about that musical, just the way that they like wrote that score. This is like Ali Willis like wrote September by Earth, Wind & Fire. This musical was made by people who don't write. It's like very successful jazz and R&B composers, and Stephen Bray as well. Like, none of these people had written a musical together. They were also not like a famous group of collaborators. They just came together. They made this really interesting, beautiful score that functions like, it's like, it just feels like it functions like a musical. Like, it does all the classic sort of, like, there's motifs that carry throughout in a classic musical way. There's like storytelling that happens really well through song in a musical way, not like a, you know, like sometimes it doesn't have the Julia Michaels wrote a pop song for Disney movie kind mm-hmm. of problem where the songs storytell in a different way. It like is musical theater storytelling by people who had never done that before, who never did it again. They just came together. They made something so interesting and different from most other scores because they have that like other background, but also still like so technically well executed. And Allie Willis passed away recently. It just felt like disrespectful to her memory to me to cut so much of their interesting music and have other people come in and write worse stuff. I also was excited for Zendaya Garrett to like do some writing on this, and she just did one number, which was that she changed they added stuff to Shug Avery's Coming to Town, but they got rid of all the storytelling. Like, there's no like sung interactions, right? Like, it's all like it felt like she took the only thing she contributed was she made one song worse, and the other contributed songs I was like, this is nothing and it should go. that's where I was coming from, in part, was just like the narrative of the musical coming together is so interesting, and these are people who like, it's not like more people need to know Allie Willis's work because people know, you know, Earth, Wind, and Fire. But like, it just felt like this is a very cool thing that these people made that I want to get shared with the world. And when they didn't sing most of the songs that I like, I was extra aggravated.
Yeah, no, I absolutely understand why you were so disappointed. And if you didn't tell me that you were disappointed before, I would have been very disappointed too. I'm just saying the fact that I had your thoughts before made me think, oh, well, it's not as bad. It's not terrible. And I knew if I had gone in and they had not sung Somebody Gonna Love You and I didn't know, I would have been heartbroken. But I knew that it wasn't going to happen. So I was able to be like, all right, let's hear this song.
And the thing that blows my mind is they blow past places where those songs would fit. That's the thing that's craziest to me. They could sing Somebody's Gonna Love You. She has a moment where she said, it's like, this is why it felt to me like it was a movie made by people who don't really like musicals. Even though I don't think that's true. I do agree with your opinion that like, there's good dance, like some of the, when they do a musical number, they do it well, but they just don't want to do them at the most emotional moments.
When I've texted you right after seeing it, before seeing the original movie, that I was like, I feel like these people liked musicals. Like, they did a good job of showing musicals when they wanted to. I just felt like they didn't like The Color Purple musical. And then I realized it's that they were trying to shoehorn the songs into the 1985 film.
Right, that's part of the problem. But they miss opportunities to do it. Like, I also think there's a reluctance. There's this fear that it will feel less emotional to sing than it is to act, which I think, like, that's why I feel like they like musicals, but they don't get musicals. Like, the thing that is fundamental to a musical is that when you are feeling too much emotion to speak, you start to sing. And instead, people speak the most emotional moments and then reflect on them through song, mm-hmm. which is the worst version of a musical. Like, in a musical, it feels like they don't get it to me.
And I think that I can't tell if it's because they think it would be less emotional or if they're like, this is such an iconic scene from the original movie. I don't want to interrupt this scene that people are going to be excited about with a song that they don't know.
Right. Which also I hate. Like,
which
right,
pisses
like,
me off. But that's what
it's
I
it's either remake
Brain
Rot or you don't like musicals. And either way, I don't want
to
you to
me,
make
it. To me, it felt more like remake Brain Rot. But I don't know. Either way, it's not good. And I think that's also why I liked the 1985 film less, is that as I'm seeing all these scenes that I just saw, I'm like, you're the reason that this new movie wasn't as good as it could have been.
So, I get that. I understand what you're saying. I just would never blame the original for the remake being bad. To me, I blame the existence of the remake.
I know.
Should we
we should talk about the movie.
We should talk through the plot for anyone who didn't see it, so you don't have to rush out and see it. We'll just tell you what happens. That's the point of this podcast. This is the thing that drove me crazy about it. It starts good. It starts like a good musical. It starts with Huckleberry Pie, which is, I guess, the name of the little, like, hey, sister, what you gonna do motif that they sing.
Well, I think it is called Huckleberry Pie / Mysterious Ways in the Broadway album.
What? Really? I don't believe you.
I think.
I listen to that cast recording all the time. Maybe on the original Broadway cast one and not the...
No, I listen to the...
Revival?
Oh, no. It's just opening.
Because I had never heard that. I was like, oh, that's an interesting title. Because they sing... They don't sing... I was like, oh, they're singing the part of Our Prayer. But then it has a different title because they don't sing Our Prayer. Anyway, they sing the little thing.
This is how it opens.
Yes. The musical. And then... Yes, right, exactly. It starts like the musical. Then they sing Mysterious Ways. And a thing that happens in the musical that doesn't happen in this movie is that the women in town will, like, sing these little gossipy motifs throughout.
Which are very helpful in following the story.
And they don't sing. There is one in Mysterious Ways that they cut, which should have been a red flag for me. But what I was noticing was that the ensemble women who sing Mysterious Ways were singing to camera in a way that was kind of interesting. Like, they were dancing towards the camera. They were addressing the audience, sort of, but not directly breaking the fourth wall. It felt like, oh, this is cool. Like, you're giving us this kind of relationship with them where they can sort of be this narrator character in a way that feels more cinematic than, like, on stage where you just, like, hit them with the spotlight for their thing. And they sing the whole song, and they do it like a musical number, too. Because then I was, like, reflecting on it, I was like, is it just that they were singing in church? Like, that's why they felt like they could do a real musical number? But that's not true, because they're walking through the streets. People are coming up and interacting with them. They're like, what you gonna name your baby, child? That whole exchange still happens under vamp like it does in the song. It just is a good execution of Mysterious Ways. The dancing is good. The performances are good.
I was like, woo! Dancing is really good. But yes. And for anyone who doesn't know, Mysterious Ways is, well, I guess you did kind of say it, like, it takes place at church as, like, the Lord works in mysterious ways. It's really just kind of, like, setting the scene.
Yeah.
And also the characters. So we have Celie. Oh, yeah. She's 14 and she's pregnant with her father's baby, and her sister, Halle Bailey, Nettie, and then after Mysterious Ways, she has her baby, right?
Yes.
And then the father takes it.
In the musical, she actually has the baby in the song, but, right, like, in church, but in the movie, we go, you know, we get a little scene in their house. Nettie is sweet to her throughout the delivery. Then she holds her child in her arms, but then her mean dad comes in and takes the baby, which... In the musical, a beautiful song happens. In this, it's just a dialogue scene where she's like, somebody's gonna love you. Boy, if only I could express that more emotionally. And then
she's in a store.
Yes, their family owns a store. Her father owns a shop.
A woman comes in with a baby, and she's like, I think that's my baby. And then her dad's like, get out of here! So then she goes around and looks in the window and sings a song called She Be Mine, which is not in that, which is to replace, I guess, a moment, like a different moment that's not as necessary.
This song also is written by Brenda Russell and Allie Willis and Stephen Bray, which is interesting to me. Like, it seems like something that must have gotten cut from the original music, that the musical that they went back for, or maybe they wrote a new song for it.
Well, yeah, because I mean, I did watch a bootleg a long time ago, but I don't really remember. I don't think that this scene even happens in
the
musical.
I don't
it's
think
just
so
in the
either.
Because
I think that she thinks that her children
that
are
dead
until she finds out from Nettie that they're alive. And I'm not sure what it, like, adds that that's not the case. But whatever.
Nothing.
Yeah. That's... that's the choice that they made.
Yeah,
in the, in,
like,
the movie, does she know?
I actually thought it was, well, the same scene happens in the movie.
The scene does happen in the movie, okay.
I mean, like, it's a little different. Like, she gets to hold the baby, and then the woman's like, all right, give my baby back, bye.
Yeah, this song does and then feel like...
in like a voiceover, she's like, oh, she be mine, I know it, or something. But, and I thought the song was good. I was just like, this, like, I had no issue with this moment not being in the musical, whereas I take very strong issue with losing somebody gonna love you.
Yeah, and my issue with the song was less that it was like a bad song, although I didn't love it, but like if I listened to it more, maybe I would enjoy it more. It was really that, like, the scene happens, she sees the child and is like, oh, I think that's my child, and then she goes outside and the song like takes place in her head, and then mm-hmm. she's like walking through a waterfall, and like there's all this stuff happening visually, but it, like, the scene should just be she should see the baby. She should sing while she's looking at the baby that she thinks the baby is hers. And maybe we can go into her head then. But the fact that it's happening, like, not during the moment, but after the moment, like, made me feel like, can this song end now? Like, the scene already happened. Like, I felt like I already got this. It was a reiterating a point instead of making a point.
Yeah. Well, the thing with that is that it's an internal moment, and I don't think that these filmmakers could handle someone singing in a store and everyone else ignoring them, you know? Like, every scene,
there's so
every
many
scene
options.
That's sung in this movie, either everyone's involved or you're alone.
That's true. I wouldn't even mind if everyone sort of froze and then we went to the waterfall. It's just the fact that she's told that he's like, get out of the store. This moment is over. And then she's like, but what if I did it again? But farther away.
It did feel a little like, oh, I thought that this moment was going to be over, and now you're singing a whole song.
Yeah.
But,
and you also get a scene. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to continue saying what happens in the movie.
Yeah, you get a scene
then
where
she goes back. We like hop back to the window, and her dad's like, Silly, where are you? And then he yells at her.
We also get a scene where Maddie's walking, like, through the mm-hmm. shore, and Mister is following her, singing, You've Got Some Pretty Teeth, or whatever, which is a much creepier song in the musical because it happens at a different time. But here it's just kind of, like, harmless and flirty, and she's like, mm-hmm. You leave me alone, sir. And then he shows up at the store and says, I want to marry Nettie. Which,
that
in
is
the musical,
a,
he sings,
weird, I wanna
Mary.
She's
a sweet young thing.
I find that a very just like, strange choice, because it's not even like trying to emulate the movie, because in the movie, the 1985 movie, it's like the first time we see Mister, he's creepily staring at Nettie in church, and Nettie's like doesn't realize. And then he goes up, just like in the musical, the first time we really meet him is when he says he wants to marry Nettie. And Nettie's like, who's that? And Celie's like, the devil. So it's weird to kind of have the introduction of Mister be like weirdly kind of trying to be charming, because he's very straightforwardly the devil in every other adaptation. But yeah.
I also, a song that they skip, not to keep harping on what doesn't happen, is they skip Our Prayer, which for me, like the Celie Nettie relationship in the musical feels much more like Celie is protective of mm-hmm. Nettie. Like, Celie receives the brunt of their father's abuse, but also like feels like the older sister in this relationship, whereas here it feels a lot more like Nettie is taking care
yes.
of Celie in every way. Like, she just feels very maternal.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, I was like, I know that Celie is the older sister, but I'm questioning myself right now if Nettie is actually the older sister.
Yeah,
so I agree
yeah,
with you.
It doesn't feel, I mean, it's not like, oh, this is feels bad or anything. It's just like, there's,
it's just
I think the
dynamic.
Yeah, and the dynamic between them also feels like Celie has protected Nettie from the brunt of their father's abuse. And so then when Celie, like, and to, that's, like, she takes the abuse sort of out of protection of Nettie. And that's why Nettie is able to just, like, to do what Celie does not when Pa tries to touch her later on, and she comes to Nettie and Mister, and also mm-hmm. like she leaves, she fends off Mister, like she is able to be sort of like looking out for herself in a way that Celie hasn't, because Celie has taken on this burden of older sister. Whereas there's just something about this where, like, when they replace, they don't really replace it, they just introduce a new song where Nettie sings, just, which, like,
I can't remember anything about this. It didn't tell any story. It was just like, yeah. Let's, so what happens is that so Celie marries Mister.
Mister wants to marry Nettie. The dad's like, no, but you can take Celie, she's too old.
And then, ugly. Yeah. And so Nettie's like, going to school. So he's kids. Like, Nettie's going to be a teacher. She needs to finish school, but I don't give a fuck about Celie, so take her. And then Nettie comes and is like, Pa tried to touch me the way he touched you, so I ran away. Can I stay here? And Celie's like, of course, I love you. And
Celie's got all this work to do because Mister's song. Kind of abusive, and she's taken care of his kids. Like, he married her because he needed a mother for his children. And so
this
she
is
so,
also just seeing, like, the ways that they changed people from the movie that I'm just like, huh, why? Because I thought you loved this movie. Like, the introduction to Harpo is that they're eating dinner and Harpo's like, Miss Celie, this is really yummy. And she's like, oh, thanks, Harpo. In the introduction to Harpo in the 1985 movie, Danny Glover's like, this is your new mom. And Harpo's like, throws a rock at her head.
Yeah, it does feel like this, like, Harpo is the sort of, like, answer in this movie to the complaint that all the black men are abusive and horrible in this, is like, oh, but Harpo's kind of sweet, right? Like, he's just kind of dumb, but he's a good boy the whole movie. He doesn't really do anything bad in the way that, or you know, obviously he hits Sophie once, but it doesn't, he feels like he's sort of supposed to be the counterpoint to, he's the potential for good that we just need to nurture correctly, you know?
Well, I feel like Harpo's that way in the original too.
Okay. I haven't seen the it's 85 just movie, as a so kid. I believe you. I retract my
like,
point.
Like, as an adult, everything is the same with the relationship with Sophia. Except one thing that I think is very weird. I mean, I think that Squeak is a weird character regardless. But Gabby and I were both, like, at first, before she spoke, I was like, is that their daughter? Like, they did not have a dating dynamic at all. And then I was like, who the hell? Like, I know that they're supposed to be dating, but they don't seem like that at all.
Yeah, you know what would help with that is the song Big Dog, where she comes by and mm-hmm. asks for a job, but they skipped that song for a different, much
not
worse song.
Big Dog.
What? Not Big Dog. Brown Betty.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. They also skipped Big Dog.
Yes, they did.
Anyway, Celie and
so
Nettie sing the song
moving.
Where
I don't
yeah,
Nettie's
what just
the song
like,
is like it's just like let's
she's
have
just
fun.
Like, hey, keep your head up, it's okay. And Celie's burdened with all these tasks that she has to get this firewood, and Nettie's like, hey, don't even worry about it. Let's just go look at hats, and they go look at hats in the mirror. Nettie's always wearing a hat, but Celie does not have a hat, and mm-hmm. they look at hats, but she doesn't get one because she has to go get the firewood, and then they get the firewood, and that's just like it's just like, oh, her sister brings like joy to her life. Like, I guess that's the point of the number, is like Celie's much happier with her sister around. But it doesn't,
you know,
it,
what
it,
also it, would tell us that our prayer
right, and it shifts their relationship in a way that mm-hmm. I don't see the point of. Yeah. It's not like bad, it's just like why. And it does have the consequence of it feeling like, yeah, like Celie, you gotta just stand up for yourself. Like, it feels a little bit more like you lose that element of Celie's character of, like, protector.
Mm-hmm.
But then the song that would happen, like, then the scene that would have been the song that they sang when Mister saw Nettie just walking around happens. No music. He just tries to assault her. She says, I'm getting out of here. This is, like, exactly the 1985 scene,
or
right?
Or she... No, it's because raining. It's so much worse in the 1985 version. It's not raining in the 1985 version.
Oh, okay. I kind of do remember like a wide shot and she's just like running down the road.
When you were talking a little bit earlier, I zoned out for a second because I was just getting depressed thinking about that scene. Because first of all, something that I thought, you know, Halle Bailey is 23, maybe. And I don't know how old the actress playing young Celie was, but it seemed like about that age as well. They both seemed like they were playing characters who were in like their late teens, which at first I was like, this isn't getting across that Celie is 14 when she's having her second baby. But then I watched the 1985 version and they are children. And I was like, no, I don't like this. No kid needs to act like this is happening to them. Because this scene is like 5 minutes of just Danny Glover dragging these girls around and they're screaming and crying. And I'm like, enough. I get it. Enough. It's like awful. So no, it's not like the 1985 version. It's a little more to the point.
Okay. Oh God. Yeah, that's interesting. I am generally of the belief, like, let Kimberly Akimbo be proof that you can mm-hmm. play a child, like, that there's no reason to cast children as children. Like, I have no issue with PN13 works for me. Like, Kimberly Akimbo works for me. Adults playing kids when they do it. Like, I think it's more about the performance than the age. Like, the reason Riverdale mm-hmm. is crazy is not because they've cast 27-year-olds to play 16-year-olds. It's because they have 16-year-olds acting like 27-year-olds. So then mm-hmm. it just seems like 27-year-olds playing themselves. But when you, like, write authentically towards childhood experiences, I think that it is performed. And you have a talented actor. Age is not an issue. But I do think, like, yeah, in, like, May, December, when they have the shots of the 13-year-old boys, like, doing the audition tapes, it is just, like something about seeing an actual child in situations where you're supposed to be thinking about how young a character is.
May, December is so good. I will never stop thinking about that moment when she's watching the tapes and then she's on the phone with the director and she's like, none of these boys are sexy enough. And the director's like, I think you need to come home. I was like, oh my God. Yes. Anyway.
Yeah. No, it is good. But it's like, so that feels to me like an effective use of an actual 13-year-old. But I do mm-hmm. understand, like, yeah, watching children be dragged around for 5 minutes feels like a lot. Like, But maybe it does cast it differently when it's not 22-year-olds. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I still want to give Kimberly a big hug and feel so sad for her and Kimberly Akimbo. So,
yeah, no, I don't think that it is the fact that they were older. I think it's that I wasn't getting that they were supposed to be 15 or 14 mm-hmm. from their performances. But it's fine. That's not my biggest gripe at all. It's just something when you brought up this particular scene.
Yeah, yeah,
made
yeah.
me want to talk about how not okay the casting was of the original to me. But it was a different time. Hope those women are okay.
You know, you also think about the fact that, like, the little boy in The Shining apparently didn't even know he was in a horror movie. There are ways to shoot that
stuff.
I was
thinking about that because you say that kind of a lot. But there's I say no that a way. Lot. No, but you've said that on this podcast at least once before.
Oh, wow. I don't even know that that's true. I've just heard that. So I'm sorry to be really disseminating that information. I just think it's interesting.
But because I was thinking about that, I was like, yeah, there's definitely, like, I love working with kids. There's a way to work with kids that's not traumatic. But you can't make that scene and not have it be traumatic for the kid actors. Like, they're fully being abused on screen in a way that the kid from The Shining didn't have to be. But anyway, the point being, she rejects him. She, like, punches him or knees him or something, and then he gets really pissed and is like, if you ever come back here, I'll kill both of you. She's dead to you. And Celie's like, please write. And Nettie's like, nothing but death would stop
me from, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we see Mr. at the mail. The mailman comes. He gives Mr. Some letters. And Celie's like, what's that? And it's like, oh, obviously he's keeping her letters. But she doesn't seem to actively suspect that, actually. It's really just a scene for us.
Yeah. Well, she's like, is there anything for me? And he's like, fuck you. And then she is like, oh, she said nothing but death would keep her from me, keep her from writing. And it's been years and she hasn't written. So she must be dead.
Yeah. So Harpo grows up. He gets a girlfriend.
Yes. The girlfriend is Danielle Brooks. We do like a time jump. So now we've got grown up actors. Fantasia, Corey Hawkins.
Yes. And Fantasia, too old at the start of this. She performs the role. She does a fine job in the performance.
That's a thing. I kind of felt like people were too old for the whole, like, first hour or so.
It's really just, like, there's not... I'm just surprised by the lack of, like, costume and hair and makeup uses to, like, interventions to indicate the passage of time. Because mm-hmm. Fantasia plays this character over the course of decades of her life. And she doesn't look like her age has changed until the very last time we see her. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end, it's like, oh, she looks old now. But I don't know why she didn't have, like, a different younger haircut. Like, 20, like, when 20 years pass, we should have different hairstyles. She just looks like the same person.
Because I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be, like... not that much time passing between, we have like this little sequence of time passing to transition from young Celie to Fantasia. And you would think from the one actress to the next that it's been 20 years, but it hasn't. She's only supposed to be like 20 something. Like
Fantasia
young
20s. Should experience the kind of transformation that we just see in that one transition over the course of the entire movie. And instead it's like... yeah. Child to adult, 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 old lady, which is, but anyway,
but yeah,
time has passed. Harpo is a girlfriend. It's Danielle Brooks. She does not take a beating. In fact, she hits Harpo.
Well, don't skip working. So Danielle Brooks, what's her name? Sophia. She's pregnant with Harpo's baby, and she goes to meet Mr. and be like, I'm marrying your son.
And also Mr.'s like, dad no. is there.
He's like, he's no, mean. You're not. I don't like you. And she's like, Harpo, don't leave me waiting or something. And then Mr.'s like, you're not having that woman in my house. So then Harpo builds a house for them that's like on the outskirts of the property that he was gifted.
Yeah, his grandfather owns a lot of land, and that's what Mr. lives on. And that's why Mr. sings
a little song called Workin', Workin', Workin' as he's building the house.
And they're like dancing and moving stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's good working choreography, but it just bothers me because there are two extremely good songs where people are doing physical labor in the musical that are much better than this song and serve a much clearer purpose. And instead... and the song is so short, too. It's like they were like, obviously nothing's happening here. So you
well,
just
because
take like 45
then
seconds.
Sophia and her, like, I guess her sisters or her friends come in and they're like, shut up. But
anyway,
basically,
then...
Sophia kind of bosses Harpo around, and then Harpo is talking to Celie, and he's like, how do I get Sophia to mind me like you mind Mr.? And she's like, well, Mr. beats me all the freaking time. So then he tries to beat Sophia, and then she goes, you told Harpo to beat me! And then
they sing Hell No. And she leaves Harpo.
Which I always thought, because I only know Danielle Brooks saying it, I thought that it was such an iconic line because it's said like that. Because I remember watching the bootleg and everyone's like, woo, when she says that line. But she delivers it so much more iconically than Oprah does. Oprah's just like, you told Harpo to beat me? I'm like, why is this iconic?
Because it's the start of the scene, right? It's like you smash into the action with that line.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I...
But Danielle Brooks does it to another level. Anyway, she's great. I really feel like she should be winning awards.
Yeah. No, she does a good job. She sings this song well. The little friend slash lady. She leaves, she takes the kid, and her friend ladies are singing back up, and they're doing a really good job. It's a good musical number.
Yeah. And she's also like, Celie, I feel sorry for you that you just, like, take it. Like, and Celie says, this life will end, and heaven is forever. And then Sophia's like, I would kill him, and heaven can wait, or something. But she doesn't. But now Sophia is gone for the time being.
Then instead of this, like, this is interesting to me. In the musical, Squeak is the one who said, so Harpo built this house. His wife and kid are gone. So he's like, well, I guess I'll turn it into a juke joint. And then in the musical, that's when you meet Squeak. She's the one who's like, oh, you should get Shug Avery to perform. She's coming to town. And also, like, that. I'm a character and a romantic interest for you. Instead, it's Celie who says it. And they're like, wow, Celie, you're really smart. That's a great idea. But Celie's never met Shug Avery. So it is kind of a random contribution to his juke joint for her to be making. Is like throwing Shug Avery's hat in the ring. But well, anyway, Harpo's opening his juke joint. Shug Avery's
gonna perform. It was really that crazy because, you know, Celie already is really curious about Shug Avery.
Oh, that's true. You know? Celie keeps seeing a photo of Shug Avery and is like, damn, that girl's hot.
She looks at it when Mister's giving her terrible sex.
Yeah. Then I think you get this moment that's like a very weird musical tease where Harpo's, there's like this like kind of like urgent vamp underneath. It's like ba-dump, ba-dump. And he's going around putting posters and he's like, and the camera's like dollying with him. And he's like, everybody come to my juke joint. I'm opening a juke joint. It's going to be great. And it just feels like he's about to start singing like, come on down. But he doesn't. It's just all dialogue with this like urgent vamp. And then the vamp just fades and it goes into a dialogue scene. Which I thought was very strange. But then a real number does happen, which is they sing Shug Avery's coming to town. Because Shug Avery's coming to town. Mm-hmm. And she comes to town. And she goes
and
to
see... And it's Taraji P. Henson. Yeah. She's great.
She's great. She goes to see Mister. She's extremely drunk. She just passes out immediately.
And then Mister's, like, a totally different man. He's trying to impress. He's, like, whipped for Shug. And he's trying to cook her breakfast. And he's, like, burning everything. And then he, like, serves it to her. And Shug, like... throws it and is like, are you trying to poison me? And then Celie cooks her breakfast and she eats all of it and Celie's like, she liked my breakfast.
That happens in
and
the movie,
then
right?
It does, yeah. And then she comes in and because Shug's like, I need someone to wash me. So she does, and then she sings, I find it weird that it's still called Dear God Shug, because there's no Dear God Sophia, but, yes, she sings, it's a great song. I feel like she doesn't really sing, I don't know, I feel like it was different in some way. I don't remember her singing, like, not like Nettie, not like Sophia, but I don't know. The point is that she's got a crush.
Yeah.
And it's very weird staging that
yeah, she's like on a
she's
record.
Like on a record.
The bathtub is in the center of like a turntable. That's also why it felt like they didn't know how they didn't get musicals because they didn't know how to do a musical number that just took place like diegetically. Or not diegetically,
but
like
they
in
have
the space
others
of
that take place in the space, but then
but
they
I think
have
you're
these
right that it's like
songs
either...
that are like, but it's not even because, well, I don't know, because then it's not like Shug is ignoring her because she joins in,
but I think
but
that
only
that's...
in the only when they're on the record.
Yeah, like I think you're right that they don't know how to do like a something that's not a musical number everyone's engaged in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they couldn't figure out the cinematic equivalent of a spotlight. And so they just were like, let's get out of here. Let's go some, like, literally anywhere else. Name the first location that comes to your mind. Waterfall? Okay. Record? Great. Let's go there.
And then she's brushing Suge's hair and she's singing. She's like, oh my God, it's just coming out of me. That's from the movie. And then she sings the song later that's also from the movie, Miss Seeley's Blues. But they have what's not in the movie that I'm like, this was the more important part of the scene, not the brushing the hair, is that they have a conversation. And she's like, why don't you smile or laugh? She gets her to smile, and then she's like, oh, I like your smile. And she's like, don't you have children to make you happy? And she's like, well, I had children, but they were taken away from me. And then she's like, oh shit, sorry. And she talks about her relationship with her father. Her father is the preacher who sang Mysterious Ways in the beginning, but he's disowned her because she's a loose woman. But she's like, I know he still loves me, just like you still love your kids, even though he doesn't know it. They just, like, get to know each other and bond in a way that they never really do in the original.
And they do the dialogue scene where Suge says the color purple is beautiful.
Yes.
But they don't sing the song.
And Which even did, that,
when,
it's like...
When that scene happened, I was like, wow, they're not going to sing the title song. That's crazy. But they do the reprise at the end.
And she also doesn't sing Too Beautiful for Words, but she does, I don't know. I like that song, but it, I understand it being on the cutting room floor. But.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of songs. I understand songs being cut. I just don't understand the, which.
But that's another thing about, like, even though that scene is in the original about the color purple, like, in this version, they're, like, talking together, and Seeley's like, oh, I mean, like, I don't know about God. You know, God took away my babies and Nettie. And she's like, well, that wasn't God. That was men. Like, God just wants everyone to be loved, and he would get pissed off. But, like, in the original, it's just kind of, like, Suge walking around just speaking at Seeley about the color purple being beautiful. You know, she doesn't express anything. But anyway, then they have the opening of the juke joint.
Yes. And Taraji P. Henson sings Push the Button very well. Like, yes, I did not know she could sing that well, especially after seeing her be Miss Hannigan. I was like, oh, you can sing perfectly fine. But then
I didn't see her as Miss Hannigan, like, but I wasn't, like, surprised. It didn't feel to me. I was like, yeah, this is how I imagined she would sing. She's great.
Well, I had already heard her sing, and it was not as good as that.
That's fair.
But it was I was blown away.
And then Sophia is there with her new boyfriend, who's a prize fighter.
Oh, also in this number, they, like, turn the lights off and they do some fun Dance into the Dark. I like that.
They do. It's very sexual. I was like,
it kind of had the energy of the, it was reminding me a little bit of All That Jazz when they did the really sexy airplane dance.
All right, it was not as sexual as that. They were getting naked.
No, it wasn't as sexual as that, but it did just have, like, it was like, ooh, a little steamy.
But
anyway, yes, there's a fight.
Yes, Sophia is there, and Squeak is, Sophia and Harpo, like, start dancing. And this is the moment where I was like, what is happening? Because Squeak says, you abandoned us. And she's, like, mad at her in a way that I was like, I feel like you are their daughter. But she's not. She's Harpo's girlfriend. But they get in a fight. And then it turns into a whole brawl. And Suge and Seeley, like, escape. And they go to the movies.
And then they go into the movies because a musical number cannot happen if it's too intimate in the actual space of the world. Yeah. And they sing. Which,
this was though song. This is just the staging of a song that pissed me off the most because it was just bad. It was so not intimate. The choreography was embarrassing. It was like,
it was also funny that they had this big like top hat style or stormy weather like sound stage with these like stairs and all this white, but there were not like dancers filling the space in a meaningful way. Like it felt like a big production number was about to happen and then it was just two people kind of walking around.
Yeah, it was just very empty.
Yeah.
And but and that song is good and I felt like the staging did not live up to the song.
It's also hindered for me by the fact that they kiss at the end of this number. It's like, oh, these characters share some intimacy. But then we never, like, that's mm-hmm. just the end of it. Like, that does not become a plot point. This is just, like, which a song so... that they were like, oh, we gotta include this song. And they kiss at the end of the song. All right, on with the movie.
Yeah. Which is so disappointing to me. Because I remember when we were walking out, I said, like, the thing I'm most disappointed in is the depiction of Shogun and Celie's relationship. And Gabby was like, oh, I thought it was nice. I was like, well, what did you think it was? And she was like, no, I don't know. I was like, exactly. The relationship was actually clear in the musical.
Yeah.
But, exactly. Yeah, so they kiss at the end of this song, and then they wake up in bed together the next morning, and then after that, their relationship is completely undefined and ambiguous.
And then Shug leaves, which makes Celie very sad.
Well, and first then that morning, Mister is still at the juke joint, and Shug goes to get the mail. And this is when realize that Nettie's been writing to Celie this whole time, and they find all the letters.
This is another weird musical tease where there's this underscore happening the whole time. I happen to have the knowledge that there is a song that goes at this point in the story, and I'm like, oh, she's going to start singing at any point. But it's just monologue over this like very expressive mm-hmm. vamp the entire time, and then the music just fades out. It's like, why are you not singing?
But what is revealed in the monologue is that so after Nettie got kicked out by Mister, she went to a different preacher, not Shug's dad, and they are the adoptive parents of Adam and Olivia, Celie's children. So she lived with them and like taught the kids and then went with them on a missionary trip to Africa.
And then they're going through this whole drama. Like, yeah. There's all this stuff that happens in Africa. They're refugees. Very interesting. The thing that was, just to complain one more time about the production decisions here, they have this funny shot where Celie's, like, looking at a photo that her sister sent of her, so we'll know who her sister is when we see Sierra finally at the end. And I'm like, hey, you know what you could have done? You could have had her sing a song and shot the actress singing the song so that we would have that, not, like, instead of having to have an old-timey photo of Sierra. So weird. Anyway.
Yeah.
Shug leaves. Shug comes back with a boyfriend. A husband?
Or a husband, yeah.
It's John Baptiste.
I know.
Like, I was like, why does this man look so familiar? That it hit me all
at
once. And
then he started playing the piano, and I was like,
yeah, meet the song, but I was like, that's John Baptiste. But they do the dinner scene from the movie where.
I feel like we must be skipping something. Sophia oh gets put in prison.
Yeah, that's my bad. A huge thing happens.
So she takes Celie out with her prize fighter boyfriend and their kids to get ice cream. Celie's just like, sure, get me out of the house. Or she's like, no, I shouldn't. I have work to do. And Sophia's like, girl, fuck him. Get in. And she does. But then, while they're out, there's this white lady. What's her name?
The mayor's wife.
She has, like, a name. but it doesn't matter.
Lady Mayor.
She's like, oh, wow, your kids are so well behaved. You know, I've always loved colored people. And she's like, okay. No,
the colored people love her. That's what she said. She wants to hire Sophia to work for her. Yes. And Sophia's like, no, thank you. And she kind of keeps insisting. And then Sophia.
And then she says, hell no. And then the mayor's like, what did you just say to my wife? And she's like, hell no. And then he a bunch of punches her. And then she's like, you do not punch me. And she punches him. And everyone, this is just making me flash back to the 1985 film that has Larry, well, they call him Larry Fishburne in the credits. Lawrence Fishburne just plays like a random friend of Harpo who happens to be in the vicinity. And right before Oprah punches him, he goes, Sophia, no! but then, so she punches him back, and then all these white men gang
they're like
up
in a truck.
Start...
They move like little robots. They're like, hut, mm-hmm. hut, 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 and they tackle her to the ground.
And they hit her in the head with like a metal something or other.
Yeah.
So
then she's injured and she's incarcerated.
She's yelling, like, get my kids out of here. And Celie's.
The prize fighter goes.
Got him in the, yeah. And then we see Celie like visiting her. She says that she's going to come every week. And then later Sophia says that she did. And so we know that she did, but we only saw one visit. Cause then Celie sings a reprise of Hell No, seeing Sophia in this state has embrazened her to want to also fight back, I guess.
Yeah.
Which this does, there is no reprise of Hell No in the musical, is there?
Yeah, I'm not sure how this happens in the
musical. But I like this inclusion. So good job, movie.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an emotional sequence of the time passing, and then Sophia comes out, but Sophia's kind of she's clearly traumatized by this experience and mm-hmm. isn't really speaking. And then the dinner scene happens, and that's what, like, breaks Sophia out of her.
So Shug is back.
With John Baptiste.
And yeah, and she says, John Baptiste and I are going to take Celie back with us. And Mister's like, no, you're not. Like, what? And she's like, you don't treat her right. And she hasn't seen enough of the world. And we're taking her. And that's that. And then Celie's just kind of like, you know what? You are some dead horse shit. And Sophia's like, thinks it's so funny, and like, this is what breaks her out, and she's like, yes, girl, go off. And yeah, oh, we also skipped the
she
scene
says I
right...
put a curse on you until you do right.
Well,
by
wait
me.
Wait first before right before Taraji P. Henson gets back, she's shaving Mister and thinking about
him.
And then she does it again. She lunges over in the dinner scene with a knife to his throat. He's like, oh my God. And then they're like, all right, let's go, let's go. Squeak is like, I'm going too. I was like, you're leaving your father? and then she's like, everything in your life is already gone or is already crumbling until you do right by me. And then she says, I may be black, I may be poor, I may even be ugly, but I'm here. And they leave.
I've been through hard times. It's a different I'm here. But she doesn't sing the song.
But this isn't the moment where she would sing the song.
No, it's just
in
weird
the musical.
It's weird that you would sing say the dialogue line instead of singing the song.
But the song wouldn't make sense yet.
No. But it's weird.
I mean, it would make just as much sense as it does in the movie. So it could have gone here. I'm just saying.
Yes. First of all, they don't find a place to put the song. Second of all, the moment of like self-actualization doesn't need to happen in the back of the car in that moment, right? Like in the musical, she doesn't
exactly
get to that point until later.
Yeah, I because
in the musical she's in a really low point at that point.
The two I'm here moments are not. They don't really make sense. But that's because
I mean it makes sense narratively.
At this point. They've forgotten. It's no longer a half and half. It's just the 1985 movie with some songs.
Yeah, because then they do the song. Because
now they're fully. It's because I'm here is not a self-actualization moment. It's like, oh, I've been self-actualized for a while, and now I'm being reminded of my past and going to celebrate. I'm like, but that's not how this song works.
Yes. They could have told the story of the musical where this is like a low point. Suge is getting Celie out of a bad situation, and then Celie later is able to kind of like feel that independence on her own. But in this moment in the movie, this is when Celie feels like self-actualized. And so they have that happen, and they use the dialogue that is the same as the line from the book that inspires a song at a different, but it's just, yeah, it's, it makes the song a double beat again. But they go to Nashville. Is that where they're going?
Yes, Nashville. And
John Baptiste plays a good the time. Quincy Jones song from the movie.
Yeah. Sister. And Taraji P. Henson sings it. It's like she just released like a record called Miss Celie's Blues, and then there's a bunch of people over. I think it's her birthday, no?
I think it's Celie's birthday. Yeah.
And she sings the song for everybody, and then she gets a phone call, and it's for Celie, and it's that her dad died. So they go back for the funeral. And his new wife is like, this, everything is yours. And she's like, what? He didn't leave it to you? She's like, well, he had no right to. It wasn't his to begin with. He's not your dad. Your real dad died. And then your mom remarried. And they left this land to you. So then she opens a pants shop.
Yeah.
And she sings and Miss Celie's pants. It's great.
I love that song a lot.
And also, everything in Mister's life has been crumbling.
Yeah.
So.
But before the consequences of that, you get the scene, right? That the scene of Suge going to her dad, which is just a recreation of the exact same scene in the movie, right?
In the soundtrack that comes after I'm Here.
Oh.
So I think that.
Sorry, because I'm Here happens with absolutely no context. Yes, it's so hard for me to know when it happens.
That's why I was going back to Mister, because that's weirdly the thing that inspires the song. Is that so he's like, oh wow, everything is crumbling. I guess I should do right by Celie. So he's like reading, he gets another letter from Nettie that's like, we are in big trouble. We need to get back to America, but like we don't have documents proving that we are American citizens. So then Mister like pays someone,
the government, to find those documents.
But that's not even what he gives her.
He gives her the hat that Nettie was always wearing. And then we get a flashback to them outside the hat store, as if we wouldn't remember that hat. That was crazy to me. I was like, this movie is, it's been 2 hours. I remember what the hat was.
It's a very, very bizarre scene. I was like, why are you here and you're not going to tell her I'm helping your sister, A, this is the situation, and B, I'm working on it in this way and I'll keep you posted. He's just like awkwardly gives her a box with some random shit and then is like,
and then
he buys some pants and he's like, can we be friends? And she's like, sure. I'm like, what? This man who ruined your whole life?
And then she sings the most famous song from this musical.
And then she sings, "I'm here."
And I'm like, they have to cut the first two lines because they don't make sense. Because she's not responding to any real external stimuli. Yeah. There's no one she's singing to.
It's extremely disappointing.
Yeah.
It's a song that you would think you can never go wrong with, and yet they completely missed the mark. And I mean, her vocal performance is spectacular, but it's just a shame.
Yeah.
And then we have this scene that I was also like, no offense, but I would much rather see your relationship with Seely, the main character, than you reconciling with your dad, but whatever. And it's also not as dramatic as in the 1985 version. In that movie, they're all having like a little shindig, and she's singing Miss Seely's Blues again, but then it's getting overpowered by the church singers. And she's like, you know what? Stop. And she starts singing the church song, like, really loud. And they're all marching. And she, the doors burst open into the church. And she's singing the lead. And then they have a big hug. In this movie, she just, like, sits down at the piano with him. And they sing. And then they hug.
There was just something weirdly familiar about this scene to me. I was like, I don't know why this is happening, but I feel like I've seen it before. I guess because I kind of have, but what you're describing seems better.
Yeah, it was.
But it's much more emotional. Reunified with her father. And then
Seely gives an invitation to Mister for this big Easter brunch, and he wears the pants that he bought from her. And everyone's like, what are these pants? And then Sierra.
Also, those pants, I was like, this doesn't seem possible. It seems they seem too shiny for clothing in this time period. like when did that fabric get invented?
I don't know.
They weren't like silk. They were like,
yeah.
They had like polyester glitter.
You just gotta go with it.
Yeah.
They were fun pants.
They were fun pants.
Silly.
Like maybe Seely is a textile inventor, and that's cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, and his guests are her family, who he's brought back from Africa.
So she reunites with Nettie, and she meets her kids.
She meets her grandkids, and these children were given no direction. The entire family gathers around for Easter dinner, and they start singing Color Purple, and the little boy does not even know the words. He's not trying. He's like, the child actor is like looking around, scratching his face. He's completely disengaged from what's happening around
him. I didn't notice that. That's funny. But yeah, so they sing it's like the Color Purple reprise, but for the first time.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the movie. So yeah. So it's a little all over the place. But what can you do?
If you've listened to this potentially hour and 20 minute podcast.
Yeah, it's gonna be long.
Please,
I won't edit it at all.
I encourage you to go listen to the original Broadway cast recording because it rules.
Listen to 2015 cast recording. That's the one we like.
Yeah, but the music in this is really good. This movie just does not like do it. You wouldn't walk away from this movie thinking that this is a really special musical.
But
it is. Just believe us and go listen for yourself. But, you know, so I'm disappointed that it didn't bring something that I think is really special to the masses, but it is fine.
Yeah. I know, seeing the trailers after the fact saying, like, this isn't a remake, it's a bold reimagining. I was like, you're lying. Like,
the musical is a bold reimagining. This movie is not.
Well, that's why I thought at first, when I saw them before, I was like, yes, it is a bold reimagining.
The thing that pisses me off about the trailers is that they have, the first trailer has,
I saw you tweet that. I was like,
that's so crazy to use that line and then not even include it in the movie.
Yeah. I never realized how important that first line is for the whole song to make any sense. But yeah, that's The Color Purple, and now we don't have to talk about it ever again.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about Mean Girls next time.
Yeah, which also doesn't come out in the UK until next week, I think. So it was good that we did this.
Oh, good. Yeah. Cool. Well, all right. Tune in next time for Mean Girls. I'm going to go think about Kimberly Akimbo. But
I'm going to go watch start listening the European
to talking about this made me remember how much I love that music. I'm going to start listening to it again.
I've been listening to it ever since I saw
it. I was listening to it nonstop after seeing the movie, but then I saw Kimberly Akimbo twice in a week. But now I can
this music is better than Kimberly Akimbo music.
Yeah, I'm more fascinated by the story of Kimberly Akimbo. But the music is good. Janine Tesori rules.
It was like I liked it in the moment, but then I listened to it afterwards. I was like, the music doesn't like do anything for me in the way that the acting and the story does, you know?
We have different relationships. The music's doing it for me.
Okay. Well, I'm happy that it's doing it for you.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not as special as this music.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
Well, thanks for listening.
Yes.
I don't know if we ended the podcast yet. I'm still recording.
Me too. And she's not editing, so you're hearing this. Goodbye. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
I will now stop recording.